Hello, and welcome to Inside of Influencers, a podcast where we deep dive into the world of the elusive social media influencer. I'm your host, Allison Lindsay Noble. We all have our favorite people to watch on YouTube and our favorite Instagram influencers, but the question is, how do these people obtain such a large presence? Also, why are so many people engaging with online celebrity making? We've all heard of stories of people like the D'Amelios. After becoming famous, their net worth skyrocketed. They even have their own show on Hulu. Understanding this, most will wonder how, after only posting a few dance videos on TikTok, did these folks make their fortune? In this podcast, I hope to enlighten everyone to the practices of social media influencers, or SMIs, and how they make their money. I want to examine how the industry of social media influencers, as lucrative as it is, has become a multi-million dollar industry in and of itself. Before we begin, though, we need to have a baseline for our understanding of social media influencers. SMIs, if you live under a rock, are the byproduct of the digital age. In the advance of technology and the internet, people have become more visible than ever, allowing them to create and maintain a celebrity status for themselves. In fact, social media influencers are often referred to as micro-celebrities, who are defined as individuals that cultivate a following online, which in turn affords them celebrity status. This version of celebrity has only recently emerged in tandem with the emergence of social technologies. However, the concept of celebrities has been around for years. Since the creation of celebrity as a concept in the 18th century, celebrities have come a long way regarding the agency over their own image and have taken on new methods and meanings to undertake this reclamation. Pre-modern celebrities' value was placed in their usefulness to the industry they represented and were often used as pawns to obtain more traction with the public, whereas today, celebrities are afforded the agency over their own image and the ability to capitalize on it through digital means. Thus, it is important to understand that advertising and celebrity ostensibly go hand in hand, reducing down to one simple practice, self-branding. Self-branding is a method of creating a personal, stylized brand and maintaining it to commodify oneself online. As social media influencers post content to their platforms, garnering followers and opportunities that have the potential to afford them celebrity status, they are also creating a brand for themselves to engage with their audience and be used as a tool for advertising. In other words, the rise of SMIs can be paralleled with the advance of online marketing and e-commerce, which gave way to social media platforms enabling paid advertisements and furthermore, paying micro-celebrities to promote their product. Through all of this, the newly formed version of online celebrities leads us to want to know more about how anyone might be able to do this. In addition to that, most people regard being an influencer as easy, but we know that this form of digital labor requires many hours of work, deliberate planning, and the crafting of persona and public relations capabilities, thus making it an important form of digital labor to examine, and one of the reasons why we need to uncover the practices of SMIs. Through this podcast, we will discover how much work actually goes into becoming an SMI, and how the average person might be able to follow this career path. If we look at certain micro-celebrities like Emma Chamberlain, Asiami Gold, and Tyler Oakley, SMIs whose fame had its inception on social media and reached heights of grandiose proportion, we might be able to find out. You might have heard of Emma Chamberlain. She's a big name in the social media industry. As of today, Emma has 11.2 million subscribers on her YouTube channel, where she started her claim to fame. In addition to her millions of followers on YouTube, she has a few more million followers on her Instagram, 15.1 million to be exact. Emma has since expanded to other platforms throughout her career, including starting a podcast called Anything Goes, which she started in 2020, and her TikTok, which she has around 10 million followers. Emma has even branched out to Twitter. However, she has stopped using this platform for personal content due to some controversy over her posts. Nowadays, she uses Twitter as a platform to promote her businesses and podcast, sharing thousands of followers on each Twitter account. Emma started her career in 2017, when at 16 she failed her driver's test and shot a lookbook video with her dad for her YouTube channel. For those who don't know, a lookbook is a common type of video where a video blogger, will show off different outfits that they like. As Emma's content grew in popularity and throughout the last 4 years, Emma's career has shot to the height of stardom. Emma not only has become a star, but a rich one too. Social Blade, a social media analytics firm, estimates that from her videos alone, she makes at least $120,000 a year, and perhaps as much as $2 million. Emma, an only child, was born in San Bruno, California, on May 22, 2001. At the time of her start on YouTube, she was living in the San Francisco Bay Area with her parents. One of Emma's common topics in her videos is her love and admiration for her parents. In many of her videos, she even refers to them as her best friends. The support from her parents in her career as an influencer has garnered much respect from Emma and her fans. In fact, it was her parents who encouraged her to start YouTube in the first place. When Emma was 5, her parents got divorced. However, she stayed close with both of her parents, especially her dad. Like Emma's father, a painter, Emma's career points towards the shared interest in creative pursuits. Emma's father even started his own YouTube channel, banking off of his daughter's success, where he mainly films himself painting scenery. Around the same time as her parents' divorce, when she was 5, she started to watch YouTube. Emma detailed that this was a major force for her during this time, explaining that YouTube made her feel like she had cool friends to look up to. Growing up, Emma would make videos for school and for fun with her friends. This is a really common experience for Gen Z people. Even I grew up, similar ages with Emma, watching content and making content for school, especially, and sometimes for fun. Emma's love for making and editing videos really started to pick up speed in her sophomore year of high school, when she began making music videos of her and her friends. This is also where the infamous Emma editing style came from.
See, she found one specific edit that, like, made it look like you were glitching, like, walking back and forth, and she sprinkled it in multiple times to make the video just a little bit more interesting and add a little bit more of that depth to it. And while I don't want to harp too much on her very first video, I think knowing what we know about Emma now, being that she kind of popularized an entire genre of editing on YouTube, you can see her need and her want to experiment with this type of content and with this type of editing.
This editing style included zooming, adding text to the screen, and pausing to point out the best parts. Now, there is an entire subgenre of videos that mimic her style, and a host of YouTubers who talk or edit just like her. Even before Emma's first video, the one she shot with her father, Emma created a private video after learning she had flunked a test in which she was sobbing due to the stress of it all. This stress surrounding school turned out to become a major theme in Emma's videos, as later in Emma's career, she dropped out of in-person school and switched to online. Emma's father was the one who encouraged her to find something outside of school that she was excited about, in which Emma came back and said, "I want to do YouTube." Now, we must talk about the advantages of coming from a background that Emma is coming from here. Growing up in the San Francisco Bay Area, one of the wealthiest areas in the United States, already gave Emma a leg up in becoming an influencer. It is important to note here that for most people, they do not have the time or money to pursue SMI interests, dealing with 9-to-5 jobs, school, and more. For Emma, starting her career when she was living at home with her parents, not having to pay for living, food, and other amenities, was the most advantageous thing and 100% contributed to her success. Starting her career as a teenager, it is no surprise that Emma's audience were also teenagers as well. Emma's target audience, like most influencers, were around Emma's age. Therefore, Emma's early content followed what she did in her average teenage life. Emma shot vlogs from school, which people loved and provided content that would speak to her position in life. For example, Emma created videos where she detailed that she wanted a Gucci t-shirt, which she saw other influencers wearing, and instead of buying for lack of money, she recreated the shirt herself.
You know, okay, sure. You know what? I'm willing to drop the big bucks to buy a cool shirt. Sure. But for 450 bucks? No. But you know what? I'm not gonna give up right now. Because I could just look at this price and be like, there's no way I could do this. I can't just buy a $450 shirt. I'm not a celebrity and I'm not loaded. So, you know, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to just look at this and give up and just be like, you know what? No, Emma, you won't get the Gucci shirt. No, I'm gonna take matters into my own freaking hands and I'm gonna get myself a Gucci shirt. How am I gonna do it? I don't know.
As Emma was making all of this content cater toward her target audience, her school vlogs were, dare I say, popping off. That was until... Emma's school told her to stop recording at school. This led to Emma's decision to drop out and start online schooling. From then on, Emma was able to spend more time on her YouTube channel and started to gain traction with sponsorship deals and opportunities outside of her channel. Emma's first sponsorship video, which she still has up on her channel, was for Curology, a skincare brand. In this video, she details how stoked she was to finally have a sponsorship.
Getting brand deals has not been an easy thing for me.
Not only has it not been easy, but it also hasn't been possible.
Another brand that would sponsor Emma was the company Doat, an online shopping app, who sent Emma to Fiji and the Coachella Music Festival. She was even named one of the Doat Girls, which is a group of young fashion and beauty vloggers who were also sponsored by Doat at the time. Through this company, Emma Chamberlain started her first merch line in 2018 called High Key by Emma Chamberlain. Additionally, in 2018, Emma moved by herself to Los Angeles, the hub for all large YouTube creators. Since this first merch line, which did not do well in the public eye, Emma has released several clothing lines and has ventured into other business opportunities, like starting her own coffee company, Chamberlain Coffee. Despite the controversy surrounding her first merch line, Emma prevailed and ran into the best PR opportunity that she had had so far. Enter the Sister Squad. During 2019, Emma was filming collaboration videos with popular YouTube stars The Dolan Twins and James Charles. The cross-promotional videos merged their audiences and they gained thousands of followers respectively. During this time, Emma created her most viewed video to date, Road Trip to Vegas featuring the Dolan Twins and James Charles. This video reached up to 35 million views. As fast as this partnership started, it ended with some sort of beef between the group. Emma still benefited from her time in the group, though, and started to do interviews for companies such as Vanity Fair and Cosmopolitan. Around this time, Emma even started to star on the covers of magazines for these companies as well. All of this traction enabled her to start her coffee company, which she has since created separate Instagram and Twitter accounts for in order to promote it outside of her own brand. Emma is very open on her platform about her mental health, and this has also become a very large topic in her content, especially her YouTube videos and podcast. It was around 2019 that Emma started to lose her passion for editing videos, chalking it up to her mental health. In her podcast episode, Rock Bottom, she explains that she goes through periods of depressive episodes and has struggled with this her whole life. This led to Emma handing off her editing responsibilities to an editor and her taking a step back from YouTube for a little while.
I started a podcast, you know, I was working on other projects, and I also wanted to have a social life because I had just moved to LA and I was like, okay, I need to meet friends and be social and be a teen and enjoy my time here in LA. And I felt like I couldn't do it all at once. And so I quit editing and I handed that off to a very talented editor whom is now a friend and whom I appreciate more than words can explain.
Recently, in 2020, Emma has regained responsibility over the editing of her videos and has completely changed her style of video as well. Before, Emma's videos were poppy and exaggerated with the classic Emma editing style that became so popular all over YouTube. Now, Emma's videos follow a more voyeuristic pattern, slow and melodic, with a stark contrast to the early content she produced. Despite this change, Emma is still allotted brand deals. However, now she's gaining traction within larger fashion brands and magazines like Vogue and Louis Vuitton. In addition to these sponsorships and brand deals, Emma has been given the opportunity to attend various events classed for large celebrities like Paris Fashion Week and the Met Gala. Emma's platforms continue to grow and grow and grow. Just last week, Emma had 14.4 million followers on her Instagram. Today, when I checked it, there was around 1 million more. Emma is a prime candidate to look at when considering SMIs and their practices due to her age, how she started her career, and where she is today. However, before we learn more about her SMI practices and self-branding tactics, we need to learn about our other sources of SMI information, thus leading us to the next influencer in our study, Atsuyami Gold. Switching gears to our next contestant, let's take a look at a different kind of creator. Atsuyami Gold's career started on Instagram. As of today, Atsuyami has 309,000 followers on her Instagram, which she started 5 years ago when she was 21. As a big name for Black creators on the platform, Atsuyami provides lifestyle, fashion, and travel content to her followers. In addition to her Instagram, Atsuyami has started to branch out onto other platforms as well, like YouTube, Twitter, and TikTok. Though successful on Instagram, Atsuyami does not have as many followers on her other platforms as she does on her Instagram. As of today, Atsuyami has around 5,000 followers on her YouTube, 4,600 followers on her Twitter, and merely 223 followers on her TikTok. In fact, Atsuyami only recently started posting consistently to her YouTube channel in 2020, but hasn't posted to it since August of 2020. Later, we will discuss more in depth how each platform differs from the next and which ones are better for cross-promotion. Atsuyami first encountered the power of social media through Tumblr, a blog and photo-sharing platform.
I believe when I started, you know, blogging and just got into this industry of like wanting to tell my story and wanted to share more about myself online in this digital space. Back then it was Tumblr. Tumblr was the platform a lot of us had to just express ourselves. And, you know, if you were the Black girl, you mainly were like the YouTuber who focused on natural hair because natural hair was the thing back then. But I wanted to tell a different story of, you know, the Black woman.
When Atsuyami first joined Instagram at 21, she said in a Cosmopolitan interview, "I didn't see anyone who looked like me, so I began to wonder, this aesthetically pleasing and beautiful lifestyle that I'm drawn to, is it only attainable by people who don't look like me? So I decided I wanted to give a different perspective to women of color." Atsuyami was born in Port Harcourt, Nigeria on September 30th, 1992. Atsuyami grew up in Port Harcourt and spent time traveling between there and Apuadal, where her extended family and father are from. Our influencer moved to the United States in 2003 when she was 11 to Atlanta, Georgia. From there, Atsuyami was pushed to become a nurse by her parents and recalls making herself believe that that is what she wanted to do with her life. She says in the Cosmopolitan interview, "I'm from Nigeria, and those with Nigerian backgrounds know that, to our parents, education is the most important and most valuable thing you could ever achieve in your life." As Atsuyami came to terms with her need to pursue creative work, she quit nursing school at Georgia State when she was 22 and became a full-time blogger slash Instagrammer. As a result, Asiami's parents were not happy at all and didn't speak to her for 4 years after her decision.
They have not accepted it. Till this day, my parents want me to go back to school and be a nurse or a doctor.
So no, they're not in full acceptance of my career choice. There's no way. They are Africans. They will never accept it. And I have to live with the fact that I am disappointing them every day by living my best life.
As a result of her upbringing, half in America and half in Nigeria, Asiyami was afforded many opportunities to pursue a nursing degree and become successful in that field. However, after quitting school, she was no longer supported by her family and decided to move to New York City. Upon arrival in New York, Asiyami was able to stay with a friend until she gathered her bearings and was able to get her own place. Asiyami recalls in the interview with Cosmopolitan, "I ate noodles every day, and it became my favorite meal. I remember people would invite me out, but I was so ashamed to go out because I had no money to buy food." Asiyami continues her interview with Cosmopolitan, "I got to New York on a Thursday, and that Friday, at my new job at the Urban Outfitters in Williamsburg, I checked my email, and there was a message from Gap. They wanted me to be one of their Atlanta photographers for a children's project." At this time, Asiyami had around 20,000 followers on her Instagram and was given this opportunity to work for Gap because of it. However, she knew that being an SMI was not going to be as easy as she thought. After her first gig, Asiyami was able to maintain her photography career and continue dedicating time to her platforms. Eventually, in 2013, Asiyami launched her online website and agency named Asiyami Gold, where she posts her blogs, Instagram photos, and details, and now offers classes on photo editing and being an influencer. Her website states that her agency, with a keen eye for design and distinctive aesthetic, has been sought after by Gap, J. Crew, Pantene, Vogue, and more for her photographic nuance and creative direction. As it seems, Asiyami is bigger than ever today, with sponsorships from huge brands such as Armani Beauty and Lululemon. In addition to her sponsorships, Asiyami's career has led her to create several fashion lines, which correlates with her professed goal of starting her own fashion brand. Her first fashion line was released in 2014, called A.AU, featuring clothes that brought both her cultures, American and Nigerian, into her work. Since then, Asiyami has been selling her clothes on her website and has produced many clothing lines. Another goal of Asiyami's is to give back to Nigerian children who, like her, weren't able to nurture their creative instincts while young. In the future, Asiyami wants to open a creative school for children in Nigeria so that they may explore that side of themselves like Asiyami wanted to do. Now, I know what you're thinking. It's time to get into the nitty-gritty of how social media influencers social media. However, we aren't done yet. We have one more influencer to understand. You might have heard of him. Tyler Oakley has been an SMI since 2007, when he uploaded his first video titled Raindrops. Tyler, like Emma, started on YouTube, where at the height of his career, he amassed upwards of 7 million followers. Tyler has also expanded across platforms, generating followers on Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, and TikTok. It seems that from YouTube, the natural progression is a podcast, because like Emma again, Tyler also has his own podcast, which he co-hosts with his friend, called Psycho Babble. Like Asiyami, Tyler is also an avid Tumblr user as well. In the beginning of Tyler's career, he mainly posted videos so that his friends from home knew what he was doing when he went to college. Soon enough, though, Tyler would become so big that he would be interviewing celebrities like One Direction and former First Lady Michelle Obama. Let's see how he got there and where he is now. Tyler was born on March 22, 1989, in Jackson, Michigan. When Tyler was a toddler, his parents got divorced and had 12 more siblings amongst both of his parents' new families. When Tyler was young, he moved to a new city and joined theater and choir. When Tyler was in high school, he came out to his family and friends.
I went to Michigan State University, where I studied communication with focuses in marketing and social media. Although I was doing my own thing at MSU, I still really missed Rachel, Dolan, and Eric from high school, and I wanted to find a way to keep in touch with them.
Tyler had saved up enough money for a new laptop and figured that YouTube would be a great platform to keep in touch with people. Tyler admits that he was doing the same things that other influencers were doing at the time, mainly skits, lip-sync videos, and sit-down vlogging-style content.
Over the next year or so, Tyler continued uploading these vlogs pretty consistently, and throughout 2008, Tyler made quite a name for himself, releasing videos like Pimp Cup, a 30-second long thing that grew into its own quasi-meme, having been parodied by the likes of Charlie Is So Cool-like and John Green.
Tyler started to pick up steam in 2008, releasing videos that garnered thousands of views, like his video Why Gay Marriage Is Wrong or Project for Awesome, Trevor Hotline. It was also during this time when Tyler started to solidify himself as an influential queer influencer. Also in 2008, Tyler started a separate YouTube channel in which he collaborated with other prominent gay influencers called Five Awesome Gays. The channel lasted until 2011, in which all of the members decided to continue their careers separately. Moving back to Tyler's main channel, he released some popular videos and his career took off. As soon as Tyler saw that he was doing well, he was able to quit his day job and pursue his SMI career full-time. 2012 marks the year that Tyler made it to 1 million subscribers on YouTube, in which he celebrated with a Draw My Life video, a type of video where one literally draws their life. Enter the beginning of his true rise to stardom. 2013 was the start of YouTube collaborations, which was heavily used in Tyler's content. Some might recall the so-called golden age of YouTube, whose members all collaborated with each other. It was all of our favorite YouTubers being featured in our other favorite YouTubers' videos. Tyler started a collaborative effort every August in which he would post 20 videos with 20 different influencers every August. This series was called, if you can guess it, Special August.
Impressive. Collaborations had always been a major component of Tyler's content, and they continue to be to this day. So the choice to do Special August just seemed like a natural next step for his channel, having since become an annual event. So 2013 was a pretty insane year for Tyler, but if you can believe it, 2013 was like child's play compared to 2014.
Through his collaboration efforts, Tyler was afforded the opportunity to work with major celebs in 2014, such as the Obamas, Jessie J, and One Direction. During this time as well, Tyler was launching two projects that he was working on, one being his podcast, Psychobabble, which in its debut was number one on iTunes, and his tour, Tyler Oakley's Slumber Party. His tour was super successful. It led to him being able to travel outside of the United States to tour as well, going to places like the UK and Australia. During all of this time, Tyler had also been supporting the Trevor Project, a nonprofit organization that focuses on the suicide prevention among LGBTQIA youth. Tyler's work for the Trevor Project was so substantial that he was named the largest donor to the project in 2014. During 2015, Tyler was able to publish his first book, a memoir called Binge. In addition to his book coming out, he announced his documentary called Snervous, both of which Tyler claimed to be a deep dive behind the camera into his life. At this point in Tyler's career, he had released multiple merch lines and was featured on talk shows such as Ellen and The Late Late Show. Now, fast forward to 2016, where Ellen announced that Tyler will host his own segment on the Ellen Show's YouTube channel.
One of the things I'm most excited about these days is getting to work with our next guest. His new show, The Tyler Oakley Show, launches today on EllenTube. Please welcome my friend, Tyler Oakley.
During this time, Tyler was at a high point in his career, with 8 million followers. This did not last long, however, but we'll get into that a little later. Throughout Tyler's career, he has been allotted many opportunities, including publishing his own book, making his own documentary, starring in other documentaries like Generation Likes, starring on talk shows, going on international tours, and hosting events like the Grammy Red Carpet interviews. A Forbes article from 2017 details Tyler's success well. His channel of diary and talk show-like videos has attracted over 8.1 million subscribers and more than 600 million views. and perhaps more in real life measurements, his popularity led him to a $6 million pre-tax payday last year, as he gets money for each view and can charge a pretty penny for sponsored videos. Additionally, in 2017, Tyler was listed as one of Forbes' 30 Under 30. Detailed in another article by The Hollywood Reporter in 2017, Tyler signed on with WME, a talent agency, where Tyler began to create his own production company. Throughout these various promotional opportunities, Tyler has been making a pretty penny off of his work. In tandem with his various modes of income, the book, the movie, etc., he has also been given many paid sponsorship opportunities from companies as well. It seems, however, that a lot of these sponsorships are pushed through Tyler's Instagram. In recent years, Tyler has been sponsored by companies such as Saks Underwear. Today, Tyler has accomplished everything from forming a major celebrity appearance to intensely working with charities. In 2020, Tyler announced his final project as a major influencer, an IGTV series of workout support. Then again, in 2020, Tyler announced that he would be leaving his main YouTube channel to explore other endeavors. Currently, Tyler is still posting to YouTube, mainly supporting his Twitch channel, where he streams videos. He is an avid Twitch personality and still uses other platforms such as Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram. And finally, we have reached the end. Each of these influencers can give us the tools we need to understand what it takes to become social media influencers. Each influencer has faced years in the spotlight, have amassed thousands of fans, and have used their brand to secure countless sponsorships. Thus, these influencers provide us an excellent insight into the world of SMIs and their self-branding practices. In the next podcast, we'll be looking into just how these folks generate followers and the income that they have received to this day. We will be examining the practices of these SMIs through the lens of self-branding, which has three different facets that we need to look at. Firstly, we will talk about relatability and how this is handled by each SMI. Relatability is a major factor in audience outreach and has proved itself to be fickle and hard to achieve, especially when reaching the levels of stardom that our SMIs have. Second, we will deep dive into the act of staying consistent, which, like relatability, is hard to keep. Consistency is extensively talked about in the social media world and has become a solid pillar for SMI success. Lastly, we will focus on authenticity, which, similar to relatability, is all about audience perception. Through these three facets of self-branding, we will examine how these SMIs are creating their brand and commodifying themselves, / how they are being commodified. Stay tuned for the next podcast. I'm very excited to get into the nitty-gritty of this subject, and thank you so much for listening. See you later. Bye. You are listening to Inside of Influencers, created and produced by Allison Lindsay Noble. The music for this podcast was composed by Wes Beeler. This podcast was produced at the College of Worcester in their sound studio. Again, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you on the flip side.